So today I thought we'd talk about sex.
All right.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're enthusiastic about it.
Oh, who wouldn't be enthusiastic to talk about sex?
You want a list? It's like I think I could point out a few people, but culturally and globally, around the world.
Is there a difference, though? I mean, this is a biological phenomenon that you're talking about.
Well, there is, but I'm not really necessarily talking about where your mind might be going right now.
And, you know, I say that just as a hypothetical statement, because the truth is, as a culturalist, I know, and I deeply believe, but more than believe, I know that there is a cultural aspect to this, and it is fundamentally a cultural construct, just as many things that we think are biologic are in fact not, like race, gender, and I would say sex.
I'm sorry, I nodded off on that.
Now, who
until
else
you said sex,
who
and then
else
I woke
could
up,
take such so. An interesting topic like sex and put you to sleep with it? But that is the first
well
aim,
done.
I mean, right? Please, to bed. And then...
Well, I see. Well, there you go. That's it. We'll tie this all together in some year. So as you can see, we're much too frightened to actually talk about sex. So we're beating around the... Well, we're beating around the subject.
We're beating around the bush.
Hello.
He stopped himself. It's the first time ever.
That's maybe the first time ever. Yeah.
Not soon enough, actually.
No, not quite. So,
go ahead, beat around the bush.
Okay, well, isn't he out of office now? Anyway, once again, the person causing me great discomfort right now is my good friend Dean Foster, who's here on culture and will, in fact, be participating in sex culturally. During this podcast.
Interesting.
And then, yeah. So to speak. And also with us is and again laughing in the background is Torin, our producer. Hey Torin.
Hello.
He's there. We can hear him. He's also in studio. In studio, as we like to say.
And he's going to look
no
up
language at
all sorts of fun facts about sex.
Right. He's been doing that actually most of the day. And we've actually interrupted him doing that.
Yes, I'm sorry, what?
To get him to do this
I'm on YouTube.
Podcast. Oh my God, how did they bend that?
I'm doing research.
Well, half the people on computers use that excuse.
Right, yes. And who are you?
I'm Tom Peterson, the Dean's co-host here on this mess, and which is slowly sliding into the sewer as I speak. So, oops, your culture's showing.
It is? Again?
Yeah.
We may want to tuck it in.
In this particular podcast, I think you want to tuck it in. Yeah.
All right, well, let's figure out how we do that.
Okay, so...
My whole point there was that it is culturally determined. It's not just a biological function.
Yeah, we got it in the first boring time through. So
just reinforcing the boringness
thank
of
you.
My
thank
statement.
You very much. We appreciate that. here's an aspect of that I want to introduce, because we got an email, a question from a listener, a woman who is headed to Brazil.
Did she raise the question?
No, I emailed her and asked.
Sorry, what I meant to say was, did she raise the issue of sex in Brazil?
In a way, yes.
Well, let's hear the question.
Okay.
Before I presume anything.
I think that's a safe way to go here. In this particular case, the woman said she was headed to Brazil for some business, but... she was going to stay a little longer, so her husband was accompanying her. And the two of them were going to Brazil. Now, the question she was asking about was, in greeting people there, Brazilians, she was confused about the appropriate way for a woman to a woman and woman to a man and those types of things to greet, and whether it's appropriate to, she thought, is there, there's kissing is what she was asking about.
Was
what
she
kind of kissing and do I actually kiss? Do I kiss the air? Do I kiss twice, one on each side? Do I kiss three times?
Was she concerned that this kissing would then lead to sex?
No, I'm taking it as an aspect of the sex conversation.
Because it could, but it's highly unlikely unless there were other factors involved.
And I think that's kind of up to them. And there
it's always up to the participants. It should always be up to the participants.
The cultural aspect of it is probably there as well. In this case, I'm talking about it because you have sexes involved here, men, women.
Genders.
And so what is the appropriate thing to do in these particular situations? And in countries that don't have the same cultural aspects to them, the idea of kissing another person would be almost their
prelude to,
or even almost an act of sex. It would be that much different from what they are doing.
Right.
So we're looking at it in that concept for the moment.
Right.
And then we'll see where we go from there.
I think that there's an aspect to greetings which then could have some sexual component to it. But I think what we're really confusing here is the sexual component with physicality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 'cause certainly sex should be physical, right? Isn't it?
Well, in theory, yeah.
Good sex certainly should.
I'm not arguing.
Right. So then the question becomes, how physical do we get in something as innocent as greetings before it becomes sexual?
Right.
Yeah, and that's an interesting question, I think.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right?
Because there are some cultures that are more physically demonstrative.
Right.
And there are cultures on the other side of that spectrum that are obviously less so.
Sure.
And so that's going to, those differences will reveal themselves in something as simple as what's appropriate greetings. In a physically demonstrative culture, the greetings become much more physical.
Right.
So in Brazil or in much of Latin America, not all of Latin America, but much of Latin America, these are much more physically demonstrative cultures, just like south of the Alps, Mediterranean culture in Europe is typically more physically demonstrative than north of the Alps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making some big regional generalizations here, but to make the point. So therefore, in greetings in Mediterranean and Latin American cultures, we're going to have much more physicality. Two men might greet each other with an abraço in Portugal and in Spain, and there may be a hug involved. We may kind of like touch each other as we greet each other. But if you go to the opposite side, in East Asian cultures where these are primarily non-touching cultures, when we greet each other, there isn't even a handshake traditionally. Of course, today in East Asia, there is because they've learned Western ways.
Sure.
And if you're a Western person in Japan, you will probably extend your hand. They will extend their hand and there'll be a handshake.
Okay.
But traditionally, it's a bow. There's no touching at all.
Sure.
And then the rules change when genders enter into it. What happens between a man and a woman as opposed to a man and a man as opposed to a woman and a woman? But it's going to be much more physical in physically demonstrative cultures and less so in cultures like Japan or China, where it would be actually traditionally taboo to touch.
Right, right.
You don't touch a stranger in greeting.
So to touch or not to touch?
That is the question.
There you go.
Now, and to your point about at what point does it become sexual, this is very interesting because I think gender roles and traditional approaches to gender roles determines that. So in cultures like Mediterranean cultures, more machismo cultures, men and women could be much more physical with each other, but not necessarily leading to anything sexual. It could if both were willing, but it need not.
Okay.
And yet that kind of behavior would be, in a culture, for example, like the U.S., interpreted as sexual and possibly unwanted sexual approaches. So it's a very complicated question. And
I'm already tired. I'm
kind of worked up, actually.
And I'm not in the mood for it right now. So we will...
But I'm worked up in an intellectually way.
I see. Well,
purely only around the topic.
Let me just move my chair over here away from you a little.
No, we're making light of something which is very serious. And
well, it could be. I asked.
Or we would try and turn something which should be very light into something that's serious.
I think that the key aspect right now that we're looking at is. This woman wants to know how many times is she supposed to air kiss.
Oh, yeah, let's answer her question. Yeah.
Remember that?
Right.
I love that question.
Sorry. It'd be terrible if she just gave us fodder for discussion and we never answered her question.
And not unusual for us, actually, but okay. So anyway, she's going to it. Let's put her in business first, because she's initially going
to traveling in business class?
She's we've got her up in business class, which who should she be touching and not touching? Okay, let's assume no one.
Well, there are class
point.
Issues involved in that,
well,
too.
I'm sure there are, yes, but let's get her already in Brazil. And she is at a place of business.
Well, it's complicated because...
Oh, boy.
Even the greeting changes depending on where in Brazil you are.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So, all right. Can you give me a rough idea of, in the different areas, what she might be doing?
Well, as I understand it from my Paulistano associates,
yes.
In other words, the people from Sao Paulo, my colleagues and friends there, a woman to woman is going to have an air kiss, that's putting your cheek to cheek, right? And that's common in many Latin-based cultures.
Yep.
But in Sao Paulo, it's going to be the two kisses. I believe that's correct. And in Rio de Janeiro, it's going to be the three kisses.
Okay.
Three air kisses. And in some parts of Brazil, there's a tradition where if you know the person that you're kissing is not married, you give them four air kisses. The fourth air kiss is a way of wishing them good luck in finding a partner.
Okay.
Because you have to know a lot about that person in order to do that.
I didn't know math was going to be involved.
Oh,
in
math
all of
is
this.
Very much involved. Yes.
Okay, so
now the Dutch, for example, in Amsterdam, it's three air kisses, and that goes against the generalization rule of physical demonstrativeness as you go north.
Yeah, sure.
In Paris, it's two.
Okay.
Right. In Italy, it can be two or three. Depending on
Hey, what do you feel like?
Yeah.
When all right. So this woman is going up to, in business. Is that similar or is that more social?
So she's meeting other women?
Well, the potential is there that she's going to meet other women. I guess she's concerned about both men and women in both business and social settings.
In more physically demonstrative cultures, even in a business meeting, even for the first time, it is possible that the greeting between two women might still be the air kiss.
Okay. And we could still most likely, unless they're in Sao Paulo, to be three kisses.
Two versus three. Sao Paulo, two. Rio de Janeiro, or the Cariocas, people from Rio, Carioca, three.
Three. Mm-hmm. Now, is there, and I don't know if you know this or not, but is there...
Wait, am I not to know this? Is this anything cultural you are asking me?
Yeah.
Am I not to know this?
Does the kissing start on one particular side?
Oh, is it left to right, right to
right,
left?
Exactly.
Yeah, well... It's usually you go to the left of the person you're kissing.
Okay.
Because it's if they do the same, then it's...
what I'm thinking. It could be like a five-car pile-up here.
But here's the thing. Because it is complicated, because there's the chance that in your business setting, if you've never met before, it may be different from if you're meeting in a business setting, but you had met before. If this is the second meeting,
yes,
the likelihood of having that air kiss is greatly increased.
I see.
If it's between a woman and a man, it might not happen on the first or even the second meeting, depending on your roles and your relationships, but it might happen on the third.
Okay.
Even all of this in business. So the golden rule here is, if you're visiting them, as is the case in this example,
yes,
she is going down to Brazil.
Yes.
Take your cue from how your colleague is behaving with you when you greet.
Sure. Okay.
Know these possibilities exist.
Mm-hmm.
So that if they were to lean in and appear to give you that air kiss, then you can reciprocate.
Right.
And then if they lean in again on the other side, mm-hmm, reciprocate.
Be prepared for that, though.
But she should don't be prepared. Initiate.
And just let the other person initiate each one of those moves. And you probably can tell, like most people can, whether they're moving to the right or left.
Precisely.
So you can
precisely
react to it.
And this is especially the case for different genders, for, mm-hmm, let's say, men and women. Okay, mm-hmm, so now you know the rules. You understand how things could possibly go in Brazil. I know that the listener who asked this question is a woman, but let's just hypothetical, say that a man asked that same question.
Yeah.
Well, most definitely now I would say take your cue from the woman you're meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Don't presume to immediately, just because you're now in Brazil,
right,
initiate an air kiss with her first time in a business setting. That would probably be inappropriate.
Okay.
But she may be comfortable and expecting that. And if so, because it is typically Brazilian to greet that way,
mm-hmm,
she might then initiate that with you. And if that happens, then you reciprocate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So in a social setting, in that, would it be much more likely that the woman who asked the question, would get that kind of response? Even if she hadn't met these people before, if she was being introduced to people.
More likely in a social situation than in a business.
Yes,
absolutely. Because, again, that is the typical Brazilian greeting. It is going to be physically more demonstrative.
Mm-hmm.
Between men and men, the same thing. An embrace, an abraço in Mexico, an embrace in Brazil. You know, and that abraço is like a hand around the back and a pat on the back,
mm-hmm,
right?
Okay.
There's no air kissing typically involved, but
right,
but it's still much more physical greeting.
But
than
pulling
the typical
close to
U.S.
close
American
together
meeting.
In that, yeah. Now right. That's certainly more common in the U.S. now than it's probably ever been, but it is not anywhere near what you would say is typical.
It's
in the
not
United
typical.
States.
It's not classic.
Especially with people who have never met before.
Right.
It's rare actually for people who've never met before.
I remember one time actually I was going down to Sao Paulo and it was, mm-hmm, my first time in Sao Paulo.
Yeah.
And I was to meet my colleague who was going to meet me in the airport when I stepped off the plane, and he was holding a sign with my name on it so I would know that I would see him.
Right.
Because I'd never met him before.
Right.
And I was expecting a Brazilian. So from what I knew about Brazilian culture, I was prepared for an abraço with this gentleman.
Yeah.
Right. And as I'm walking down the plane into the terminal, I see this guy holding a sign with my name on it, but he's Japanese.
Mm.
Clearly a Japanese fellow. And so even though as a culturalist I understood what was going on, I was initially now questioning how should I behave? Because
right,
when you look at the data, Japanese behavior between two people who don't know each other, never met before, in a business interaction,
mm-hmm,
between two guys, it's not going to be a typical Brazilian greeting.
Right.
It's going
right
to be a typical Japanese greeting, which would be just the opposite.
Right.
Non-touching. So now my question was, as I'm walking up to him, what do I do?
Yeah, yeah.
Do I treat him as a Japanese fellow or do I treat him as a Brazilian fellow? And why is this dilemma happening at all?
Right.
So as I walk up to him, he drops the sign and reaches over and gives me a big abraço.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And he's behaving in classic Brazilian ways. And of course, because the largest expatriate population of Japanese is in Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Huh.
Around the world.
Huh.
Because back in the 19th century, there was a lot of immigration from Japan to into Brazil to build the railroads, essentially.
Ah, okay.
They needed workers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even today, we have a huge Japanese population in Sao Paulo. So he's Brazilian. He just has of Japanese descent.
Right.
And his behavior was classically Brazilian.
Okay.
Huh. So I took my cue from what happened.
Sure. And you weren't surprised by it. It's the woman who wrote in.
I would have been surprised had I not known about the typical ways it could have gone.
And of course.
And hopefully we've explained for the listener how it might go.
Right.
But she's got to be prepared for maybe her colleagues not wanting to do it that way.
Yes. Yes.
Because they are in a business setting and they've never met before.
Right.
But socially, yes, it'd be much more likely.
And would it be most likely that if the person, if it was a business person who was a female, and she was meeting, and or at least one of them, is possible that woman could extend her hand out to her to shake hands?
It's possible.
As opposed to any of the kissing.
Yes, it's possible. And that would be your indication that we're not going to do the Brazilian thing here until we get
this.
To know each
right.
other.
We're doing business.
Yeah. That's but but when we meet again tonight for dinner after the meeting,
yes.
it'll be different.
Sure.
And once some alcohol goes between the lips, it's very different.
And it would also be possible that if they had another meeting or she went back again and met her in Brazil again, that at that time it could be different too.
That's right.
Okay.
I'm pretty certain that by the second meeting, it would be different and much more traditionally Brazilian.
Right. Actually, this subject could probably use a break right now. So why don't we take one? While listening to this, you may think, hey, you know, I wonder, well, if you have a question like that and want to ask us, there's a couple of ways you can do it. One would be through email, which is oopsculture show@gmail.com. That's OOPS cultureshow@gmail.com. And then there's also our handle on Twitter, which is oopsculture show. That's OOPS cultureshow. I know. It's not original, but it works. Okay.
And the interesting thing, taking the opposite culture like Japan, as I was using that as an example, part of that formality and that not touching, you know, is because we're in a business setting during the day. But once we socialize at night and some sake passes the lips, we get very physical.
Okay.
And by the end of the night, we're kind of hanging on each other. You know?
Right. So let's jump across around the world here and land in Japan. And say that, okay, in those situations, then you suddenly got what seemed to be a relatively separate organization of people. And now the sake and the familiarity is there might be read very differently by someone from the United States going to Japan. And really, they could potentially be very surprised by it.
Well, yes. Again, to be specific, and this is why cultures can be so complicated in Japan, this conviviality and physicality will be demonstrated between men and men, but still not necessarily between men and women.
Not so much with men and women.
Yeah.
Okay.
There is a particularly men and women who have come together for fundamentally business purposes.
Okay. Uh-huh. Right? All right.
I mean, who's to say about individuals, right?
Right.
We can
leave
people alone.
Well, that's sort of
they can go off into the corner,
this.
And that's
right.
that's up to them. But
right.
but in general, that kind of behavior. and you'll see that, I think a clearer example of that is the Middle East, where you have the prohibition against any kind of physical touching between men and women. Right? But the expression of greetings, particularly within the same gender, between people who know each other, can be significantly physical.
Okay.
All right. So two men who know each other, who are kind of buddies or colleagues or friends, and walk down the street and hold hands with each other.
Yeah.
And two women will walk arm in arm down the street.
And this is not an unusual sight.
This is very typical.
Right.
In many Arab cultures.
Okay.
But the expression of physicality between the genders in public.
Yeah.
So even if a man meets a woman in business in, let's say, an Arab culture, in Gulf Arabia, for example, if he's meeting her, there isn't going to be traditional greeting would not involve touching. or even a handshake.
Okay.
So you would just put your right hand up to your heart and and kind of acknowledge the other person.
Like palm onto the heart.
It's a kind of a mediated salam. Mm-hmm. The traditional salam is more elaborate, but this is a more abbreviated version of it, but a more modernized version. But there's still no touching. And now the woman might extend her hand to the man. The man should never extend his hand to the woman under these circumstances.
So always wait on those situations. Right.
But she may be, for many reasons, willing to extend her hand to the man. She may, first of all, herself be a more westernized woman.
Right. Okay.
Not a traditional woman in the region. So she may be comfortable doing that. She may understand that Western men don't understand that they don't touch. So to make him feel comfortable, and if it's not a problem for her, she might extend her hand as well.
Okay.
There could be any number of reasons. Point is, you wait in that culture to be invited to make that physical touch.
Sure.
In a handshake.
Sure.
Right. And this is, by the way, not only traditional Arab behavior. This can occur between traditionally devout Jews. You know, Orthodox Jewish women don't extend their hand to other men.
Okay.
In public.
Right. Right.
So what does this all have to do with sex?
Well, you're on to me, I see. Well, but it does, like I was talking about before, it also can be, you mentioned it, and I mentioned it about the idea of how do people perceive it, because it's all perception anyway, and how do people perceive what's going on? In certain instances, you could potentially, like I said, from the United States, you could go to a place, let's say Brazil or even Japan, when you're out at the bar after work is over, and people are doing certain things and there's contact that you might not expect. It could be perceived as sexual, and it might not be. Am I correct with that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it might not be. But then again, it might be.
But it might be.
It might be.
So is that a dilemma that the cultural world can help with? Or
I think we can help establish what traditional baselines have been.
Sure.
But these things are changing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're very dynamic. So, I think there is a certain gray area where everybody involved is a little uncertain. The traditional machismo behavior of a man could be interpreted by the woman as unwarranted sexual advancement, right? But he may see it as being kind of gallant and respectful of her sexuality.
Looking through the filters of their cultures.
Yeah, and that's complicated, right?
Sure.
That's complicated.
Sure.
That and not to be used as an excuse for anything that's unwanted.
Right. Right.
But nevertheless, that kind of misunderstanding could be at the basis of it.
Okay. All right. Very good. So in that case, let me jump to nudity. personally.
Don't we
right now?
don't we typically jump to nudity? at any possibility, right? I
mean, jump for.
I mean, if you're anything,
is it preposition time? Are we jumping for nudity?
It's preposition time. It's
grammar time. Grammar time. Everybody loves grammar time.
If you're anything like me, I jump to nudity whenever possible.
Well, okay, you're so lucky. This is not a visual podcast.
wait till we get to television.
Right,
television?
Right.
Well, that's an old reference.
Yeah. Wait till the video comes out.
Wait till we go
here.
To screens.
We will. You can, and streaming screaming. It'll be. At any rate, we are.
We're nude here.
Yeah,
now.
I'm jumping
that's
to nudity because. You wanted me to, if we're going to go for it here, let's go for it.
What about nudity?
Well, because
what's
in some places,
piece to that?
There's a very definite cultural piece, I believe. You're the expert, so you can put me in my place. But I'm seeing that in I think, very diverse types of cultures, which would otherwise seem not tied together as tightly, the approach to nudity can be similar. In it. It can be looked at as something that is not, human nudity is not a big deal. It is a much more...
It's usually a great disappointment. Man, put your clothes back on, please.
Not a big deal.
It's a it's maybe why, if anybody tuned into our last podcast, it may be why the long nights in the northern areas are a benefit for nudity, because you can't see as well. But regardless of the reason or the view you get when a person
the
is
view
nude,
you get.
Look, I'm tiptoeing through the tulips here. All right. If I know that in Sweden, for instance, the view of nudity is much more liberal than it would be. Let's say, well, much more. It's more liberal.
Well,
than
how
it
is that expressed? How do you?
They can use nudity in different types of things. They can use it in advertising. They can use it in different forms that it doesn't. It is not as shocking as it is in many other cultures.
Oh, like, you know, get nude in the sauna together.
It could be that. Uh-huh. It can
which
be that.
Which can happen, right?
Sure. And it can also be that a person might feel very comfortable, regardless of who's in their home, if they have been bathing or in the shower or something like that and come back out, they're not as worried about covering themselves up and that kind of thing. And it's not because they're...
Ah, to be a delivery man in Sweden.
Well, as we've talked about before, Sweden's a very nice-looking country also. So we'll give them a lot of...
Ding-dong cable man.
Yes. I think I saw that movie. I'm picking on Sweden here because I'm familiar with it through people I know who are Swedish, and I know quite a few people who are Swedish, and they have given me stories of kind of conflicts of cultures when that has happened. And in this particular case, it was between Sweden and the United States. Familiarity with the human body being so much easier for them than it is in the United States, generally speaking. That we look at that as something that is only for private and not for people to see. At least that's the way we deliver it in our culture.
We being U.S. American
in this case, since I am from the U.S., the United States, yes. And whereas in Sweden, it's a much more open feel, at least, again, generally. I'm speaking
Is it an
generally.
Open feel?
Well, it's... That was Dean Foster...
No, that was Tom Peterson.
Okay. Well, okay. Again, through our own filters, right? It's please filter this, whatever you do. At any rate, I'm not talking anything obscene. I'm not talking about it from the viewpoint of the people participating. But here is a land that is not, and it's not alone, that's not, it's not a warm weather. It has a stretch of warm weather, but only seasonally and not very long seasons. And it has a lot of cold weather. So it's not something where the wearing of clothes is cumbersome. It's necessary and needed. And yet the attitude is the thing that is making the difference. It appears to me anyway. So I don't know. You tell me, there are other cultures where the wearing of clothing is not as big a deal. Maybe that's not the thing. It's more the appearance of the naked body or portions of the naked body are not as impactful to others, certainly not in negative ways, in ways that are shocking or upsetting. But I'm thinking a lot of them are going to be more warmer weather countries. Is that correct?
I would be careful about associating these different kind of cultural behaviors with weather, only, although that's probably a significant piece to it.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of very conservative cultures when it comes to nudity and the expression of the human body.
Mm-hmm.
In warm weather locations.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, for example, of a lot of Caribbean cultures are fundamentally, when you get off the tourist beach, right, are fundamentally very conservative, mm-hmm. and one has to dress very conservatively.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very much warm weather.
Sure.
Right? So there are aspects to that, yes. I mean, if it's warm, you can take off your clothes. There's more of a likelihood that you're going to wear less.
And I think that's sort of what I'm talking about, right.
Than in a cold. But
it's easier to conceive of the idea that people wear less clothing and are more used to that in a warmer weather climate than in a cold weather
climate. But I think when you go beyond that initial first explanation, then it gets complicated. Then there are other factors that I think are much more profound. I think, for example, in the example you gave about Sweden and the United States, the U.S., that actually fundamentally becomes a religious tradition. It goes back to religious traditions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A very, very strong element of fundamental U.S. culture is a Puritan prudishness when it comes to the human body. And that goes back to the quote unquote founding fathers and the pilgrims and the Puritan interpretation of Christianity that they were bringing with them when they came to what would then become the United States. And I think the U.S. has always struggled with this issue. There's always this questioning going on, you know, about the expression of sexuality and the human body, and even today you see it in the headlines, you see it in the discussions and the controversy around the degree to which children should be taught about these things, the degree to which sex should be discussed in schools, the degree to which women should have a right over their own bodies, you know, these kinds of things. These discussions happen in the U.S. a lot. They don't happen a lot in other places.
Right.
Okay. That don't have this same very Puritan vein going back to its founding. At the same time, the U.S. also has countervailing perceptions of the human body and sexuality that perhaps exist because the prohibitions against being able to act so naturally around it have been so historically strong that in reaction to that, we've had examples in U.S. culture where we go just as extreme in the opposite direction.
Yep. Okay.
And for example, going back to the 60s, that whole sexual revolution and the whole idea of the summer of love and the expression of Woodstock and running around nude and free sex and all of that. That was a reaction to the very repressive decade that came just before.
The 50s, yes.
Right, which was an expression of that prudish Puritan aspect of U.S. culture. So in the U.S., we have this conflict between these two extremes when it comes to issues of sex and physicality. I don't think you have those extremes in a place that values moderation and reason like Sweden.
Sure.
And so all throughout Europe, there's a much more relaxed approach.
Now we're getting to the point that I think I was trying to get to before. The idea of it, if I'm introducing this with sex, but my point being, nudity does not equal sex unless you make it equal sex, which is what is often takes place when you have more conservative countries.
So the Renaissance didn't happen in Nebraska. The Renaissance happened in Italy.
Right.
And the celebration of the classic Greek celebration of the human body and the re-celebration of that through the Renaissance.
Yes.
Happened in Europe.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, you have Delacroix's great painting of liberty leading the people, you know, and suddenly appeared on the currency of France. But liberty is there with half of her breasts exposed to all of the people.
Right.
And it didn't turn into a sex-frenzied mob.
Right.
It turned into a mob that was looking for liberty and political justice.
Right, right.
But in Washington, D.C., in the Rotunda, they had to cover up the statues.
Under
the
one
Roman statues,
yes.
Because they were nude.
Right.
So is there a cultural element to sexuality? And yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I just think that there's people going to, let's say, vacation. And they're going to places, and there are places with nude beaches. And the concept there can be there is a liberal aspect toward sex itself. And I maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think in a culture that allows that on a regular basis, that is something that is necessarily so. That it's more likely not.
I think to your point, Tom, in cultures where, like in the Mediterranean culture, the south of France, along the coasts of Spain, in Italy. Yes, there'll be sections of beach that are nude, and that's been part of the culture, because there hasn't been this very dramatic, extreme reaction to sexuality and the human body. Mm-hmm. It's been much more relaxed. It's mm-hmm. been accepted. You can be nude. You can sunbathe. We're here to sunbathe. We're not here to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But for someone who has been denied the opportunity to experience that,
right,
seeing all of these nude bodies on a beach could immediately become associated with a prelude to sex.
And a freedom to do so, which is not necessarily correct at all.
It's not correct. And we see that not only with Americans, let's say, coming to the nude beaches of France,
mm-hmm.
but we see that to any new visitor who's coming from a culture where sexuality has been either repressed or not expressed in a more liberal fashion,
mm-hmm.
More naturally. If we have visitors from the Middle East going to that region, first of all, they may be shocked. But then if they get beyond the shock, they may see this as and interpret it as a sexually licentious kind of behavior. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's like we want to lay in the sun and get all of the body tanned.
Right.
Not just a few parts.
Right, right.
And that's all it means.
And that's basically it.
And that's it.
Yeah.
You know, even in the middle of this kind of talk, a break would be a good thing to do.
Probably even more so.
Just want to bother you one last time to say we could really use your help by subscribing to the podcast. This makes it just easier for you to get the podcast. They'll pop up for you whenever they're released, so you can listen to them on your phone or your computer or however you listen to them. And it's easy to get, too. Just subscribe using iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. It really isn't hard, and we could really use your support. So, from all of us here at Oops, Your Culture Showing, thanks. Let me just take it in another direction here. In the United States right now, there is an enlightenment, hopefully, that continues to the concept of the gay lifestyle of men and women, men with men, women with women, and so forth. In other parts of the world, this is already accepted as a much more common way of life. And in other parts of the world, it is not really even recognized as existing.
And if it is recognized, it's recognized as sinful or criminal.
Right, right. So it's where, how do you know that when you're heading out to be around? Because if you're a person who comes from that lifestyle and you are living that lifestyle in the United States, and hopefully you're living it comfortably, and you go to some place where that is not looked at as appropriate or even worse, as you're saying, perhaps illegal, what are the things that you need to know? Basically, what is the cultural aspect?
You know,
of that?
This is a complicated question on the one hand, and then it's a really simple.
And you're
question
the big cheese
the
here, and that's why I'm dropping it on.
It's fundamentally it's the same kind of question around any kind of cultural attitude that you cannot subscribe to,
mm-hmm.
right? If you believe that behaving in a way that the culture that I am about to visit is going to cause me distress or is unethical or is not right, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
you can't change them.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you can do is manage that issue. And maybe managing that issue may ultimately mean don't go.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. So I think fundamentally, if you're going into a region, if you're gay and you're going into a culture where, this is viewed as something criminal or sinful,
mm-hmm.
you have a fundamental responsibility to know what the attitude is, and mm-hmm. you're going to want to know what that attitude is before you go, and you're going to have to make a decision as to whether or not you want to put yourself in harm's way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is
now, that is not to say that their approach is correct.
Right.
In fact, it may be very, very, very incorrect.
Sure.
But your personal ability to change that is almost non-existent.
Right, right. And if I mean, you mentioned earlier that the, like in the Middle East, you may see men walking down the sidewalk holding hands.
That's right.
And women with their arms interlinked or on wrapped around them.
Arm
perhaps.
In arm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so as they go down the street, now it is, could it be, it's possible that you could, that could be a mixed message to a person, let's say from the United States in this case, who might be living a lifestyle where they've been, they find that, that with their partner, that they are going to show physical touching and things like that in public,
right?
And feel comfortable with it, and now they see this and they think, oh, okay, is this okay then? But it's just not okay, right?
Yeah, you're talking about the phenomenon of looking at a behavior that gets interpreted two different ways in two different cultures, but
sure,
it's the same behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's very interesting. You see that with hand gestures all over, right? Uh-huh. So I could give the V for victory sign. No, better example. I could give like an okay sign.
Right,
which
right.
Which is the first finger to the thumb making a circle, right?
Yes.
And in the U.S. this means okay. But yes, in Brazil, it means very much not okay.
No,
right?
No.
So two men walking down the street in the Middle East does not typically indicate any kind of romantic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply friends or two guys who trust each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or,
okay.
Or more like brother. Right?
Right.
In the symbolic sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
I remember walking down, I'm in Cairo, and I needed directions to the souk. There's mm-hmm. this big souk in Cairo that you mm-hmm. want to go to.
Marketplace.
It's a marketplace,
yes.
Right? And I didn't quite know how to get there, so I stopped a shopkeeper along the way, and I asked him, please, could you direct me to the souk? Well, because he knew that I was a Westerner and not familiar with where I was, he was a very fine gentleman. He felt obligated to take care of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only was he going to tell me where the souk was, but he was going to take me there.
Yeah.
Okay. And so he takes me hand in hand and we're walking down the street.
Yeah.
In the direction where he believes the souk is. By the way, he didn't know where the souk was either. But the sense of obligation is very strong
uh-huh,
in this culture.
Okay.
And it was important for him to try his best to help me. And the two of us did the best and we finally found it together. But he was holding my hand all along the way.
Yeah.
Now, I could have interpreted that as meaning something very different.
Right.
Coming from the United States.
Right.
But it doesn't.
Right.
It might have been. It might have.
Yes.
Right? And no doubt, two gay guys in Egypt do show affection, holding hands.
Sure.
But they're not going to do it. They're not going to be that affectionate where it's obviously more than just two guys holding hands walking down the street.
Right.
Because that would be taboo.
In fact, in most of that area, there would be public displays of affection would be not common. Am I right?
Between the genders, yes.
Okay.
But I'm sorry, within the same genders, between the same genders, yes. Between different gender, no.
Right. Okay. So but by public displays of affection, I'll take it from a United States perspective.
My point is there a gay lifestyle in Egypt and in these places where that kind of expression of public affection, more than just the two buddies holding hands,
mm-hmm.
is allowed? No, it's not allowed. Does it exist? Of course it exists.
Right. It's human. Yes. Okay, from those of you who have listened right along here to our podcast, you probably know that Torrin spent 2 years in the Peace Corps in Jordan, in the country of Jordan in the Middle East. And Torrin, when you were in Jordan for that period of time and got to know people around there, did you see this kind of displays of affection or just hand-holding, basically, as a common thing along the area? You were living in a small
yes.
town
yeah.
most of the time.
Yeah, very much so. In fact, so
and
much
be, so. And jump in, being in a small town, I'm going to assume, is even more conservative than in, you know, the big city of Amman.
For sure, yes, much more conservative. And so, yes, within the same gender, as Dean was saying, there is certainly a lot of that, you know, public affection of holding hands and doing air kissing, as we were talking about before. I was teaching English in a small, you know, I lived in a small village, And so there was a small school just for boys because the genders were segregated. So it was a school for boys, school for girls. I was in the school for boys. And so I was going there to teach every day, and I would be seeing the other 20 teachers at the school every day, the other male teachers, and I'd walk into the teacher's lounge. And when I first got there, I would just sort of, you know, give a wave to everyone in the room, say, hi, you know, how are you all doing in Arabic? and that would pretty much be it. And I was informed pretty quickly by some friends that it would really be appreciated if I made more of an effort when I first entered the room to go around and individually say hello to each teacher. And that usually involved, you know, shaking hands or more often air kissing and patting on the back and very, you know, clear public displays of affection, which was interesting for me, given that I'm not a morning person. This was in the morning, so I'm not a morning person, and I'm very much an introvert. So my natural, you know, place growing up in the United States is to, you know, sort of grunt and say, how are you doing in the morning if I'm saying hello to someone. So this is very different for me to go to each individual person and give that big greeting. And I just, you know, got used to doing that because that was the culture. That was kind of to be expected. And that's what everyone else did. So I just jumped right in and did that.
Okay. Did it make you feel uncomfortable? Or did...
At first, very much.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It took a little bit of getting used to. But it's interesting you ask that because I would say I was there for 2 years. And I would say by about 8 months in, it took a little while, but about 8 months in, I was very comfortable with it, and I even looked forward to it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Because I appreciated it for what it was, which was, speaking of appreciating, really appreciating one another's presence, right? And the fact that we had this opportunity to see each other, and especially with those teachers that I was became feeling closer and closer with, I looked forward to seeing the two air kisses become three, become four, become five, and that showed me that our relationship was growing over time, and that was nice to see.
And that's a wonderful story, Torin, because the physical demonstration of the relationship through all of that physicality is just one aspect of, I think, the deeper issue, which is that in these cultures, you've got to establish relationships with these folks. Mm. You can't just walk into a room and give a U.S. American hi and be done with it.
Right. Group hello.
Yes. Group hello. You know, that's just, it's not going to fly. It's almost insulting,
right?
Because, mm-hmm. because it's almost taken as an intentional refusal to do what is required to honor the other person, to say hello to them. And you see this, you know, in much of Africa, for example, if you're in a small town, a small village in rural Africa, let's say, or in India, in lots of rural places, you walk up to somebody who you get into a conversation with, it's not just acknowledging them. You have to inquire about the family, about the children, not necessarily about the partner. But the family, because a man inquiring about another man's partner may have all sorts of other implications. But you inquire about the family, you inquire about the children, you inquire about the livestock, the goats, the cows, the ancestors, the uncles and aunts and that are living with them. And the greeting can be very extensive. And if you leave anybody out, it gets noticed. And it's going to be commented on later on.
And in Jordan, it was kif halak, kif sahtek, how is your health, kif eltek, how is your family, right? All of those were said each time I spoke with someone. Right?
Yeah, and so to your point, I think the physicality part of it, the need for the embrace, for the kisses, that's just another way of expressing that much deeper issue of inquiring in order to ensure the relationship, which... You take the other extreme, like the U.S. It's like if we meet each other, it's like, hi, the group wave, hi, how you doing? With the
with
people
no
that
meaning.
We know.
Yes.
And people that we don't know, we don't even necessarily acknowledge.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, you know, when I said we were going to talk about sex, I was prepared to be like silly and stupid. And
well, but to your point here, I mean, there's, you know, there's an aspect of sex that has nothing to do with relationship.
Yeah.
You can have sex without relationship.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a whole area of where cultures that accept that more or accept it less. Am I right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, that's another podcast.
Well, but it's part of this one, I think.
Well, it would be, but not today. Because instead of going stupid and silly, like I was kind of hoping we would, you guys turned it into an intelligent conversation and really ruined everything. But
we took sex and turned it into one of the most boring things you could ever talk about.
Drained everything out of it. We possibly could. It's never good to drain things. And never mind.
Well, you're still nude, so that's kind of.
I did. I did go nude for us. So there you go.
But then the first thing we said about that was maybe put your clothes back.
That's true.
Well, and that was pretty silly and stupid in the first place.
That's
so there you go. I fulfilled my own destiny, I guess, with that. Look, so here's what I think, listeners, here's what you should do. You should all, here's a little exercise that I think would be appropriate. You should all go home, and if you're not home now, and if you are, go in front of a full-length mirror and take all your clothes off. And look at yourself and say, am I embarrassed by this? and if you are not, then you're a culturally wise human being at that point.
And you shouldn't be.
because you should not be.
Accept it as it is.
Absolutely.
Right.
Because you aren't. You're wonderful.
You're beautiful as you are.
You bet you are.
All of our listeners are.
Oh, of course they are.
So send in your pictures.
Oh, don't do that. No. Oh, no.
How do we turn this thing off?
Oh my gosh. Yes, that's why you're home alone and not taking pictures. Oh, yes, there is. You're absolutely right. There's many, many, many more directions we can go with this conversation, and we probably will. However, today we are going to wrap it up, and that kind of goes to nudity, doesn't it? Just wrap it up, and we don't have to worry about it.
As fast as possible. Please. Do you need a wrap?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you, Dean, for enlightening us with really, really very interesting stuff and draining the entire excitement out of the
out of what should be fundamentally one of the great human excitements or pleasures.
Absolutely.
You know, the Chinese had a saying.
Oh no. Yeah. And what do they say?
Well, they say it really is related tangentially. They say food is the first pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you think about that. They didn't have to say the first pleasure.
Right.
But they did.
They did say that.
Right, the first pleasure. So then the question becomes, what's the second pleasure?
Is there a question on that? Let's put it this way. The first pleasure you start doing when you're very, very young, and you continue doing until you're very, very old.
Well, Freud would say that that's part of the other pleasure, too.
Well, that's Freud.
But we, yeah.
And right. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Right. Right. So, okay. Wow. I would say thank you again to you, Dean, but I don't dare at this point for all of that. And Torin, thank you for sharing your portions of it.
My pleasure.
Is that your third pleasure? Or?
Pleasure.
It's my first.
But really, if you assume that the first pleasure is food, if the Chinese are right,
yes.
And the second pleasure is sex,
okay.
There's a lot of them, so they may be right on that
one,
too.
It could be, sure.
What's the third pleasure?
Oh, well, I think that'll be an assignment that we'll have for our next podcast.
Because after the first two, I can't think what's of any others.
Kite flying?
Or watching people do the other two, maybe, is for all I know.
Never mind.
Explains the entertainment business, doesn't it? In a lot of ways.
Well, I think the classic Greeks and Romans might say the pursuit of, and the ancient Hebrews, and maybe most any other culture with a learned heritage might say it's the pursuit of knowledge. The third pleasure, perhaps.
It could be, although you could make the point that the first two are also the pursuit of knowledge in certain ways. Okay. And we managed to kill it completely with that. So, in that case, it's time.
I would like all listeners to submit.
Oh, no.
A picture. No,
no. No. We already went by the picture.
I would like them all to submit what they think the third great pleasure is.
Okay.
Presuming that the Chinese expression
all right.
is correct.
All right.
And perhaps, you know, if music is the food of love.
Now grab the cable on his microphone and pull it out, okay?
So I'm trying. I've been yanking it. Okay, no.
Okay, we're moving rapidly along.
My cable.
Cable.
Oh, even that. We're not touching that. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Okay. Oops. Oops. Your culture's showing. Yeah.
And maybe more.
A lot more, I think, on this one. Oh, my gosh. Here's one thing I'm going to say, and it's going to make me a little nauseous. Smell ya. Just want to bother you one last time to say we're a brand new podcast here at Oops, Your Culture's Showing, and we could really use your help by subscribing to the podcast. And not to mention that if you hung around this long and you liked what you heard, well, this makes it just easier for you to get the podcast. They'll pop up for you whenever they're released, so you can listen to them on your phone or your computer or however you listen to them. And it's easy to get, too. Just subscribe using iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. It really isn't hard, and we could really use your support. So, from all of us here at Oops, Your Culture's Showing, thanks.